Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Way We Nerd. I'm Danny Villalobos. To the right of me,
Kyle Bound.
Across from him,
Joshua Potter.
And next to him,
Josh Moorhead.
So last time we were here, we had our good friend, our first celebrity guest, Seth Boston. And I wanted to say congratulations to him on his episode and the fact that Gotham got a season 3.
Yay! Hooray!
We were very excited. Well, I'm very excited because I really do want to see this kid become Batman someday. So all we need to do is get to season 5, and I think he'll be old enough. But anyway, we'll move on, and we're going to start with next week. We'll get a little bit more.
Quick question, really quick. Yeah. Sorry, just to immediately derail the podcast.
Please.
Does Gotham have a baseball team?
I don't know. I mean, it's the show or the song?
The city of Gotham.
It does. Gotham Knights are the football team. They do have one. They do have one. I just can't remember what it's called. Why do you ask?
Because then he could be a bat boy.
Hey,
God, that was bad. That was bad.
Edit that out.
Kyle's got the jokes.
Just kidding. Don't edit that out. That was a good one. That was a dad joke for sure, but that's a good joke. Anyway, so that'll just lead in. There's just a couple DC things I want to talk about, but we won't dwell on too much. Next week we'll get a little into more DC because next week is the opening of BVS, Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
Not versus. It's B. Yeah. Which 3 out of 4 of us are very excited, and 1 out of 4 is like, I'll see it.
I'll see it.
There you go. Now you know who
I don't think I'm going to see it until Tuesday, though. But I'll still see it before our pod.
I might want to see it. Oh, yeah. You definitely got to see it before the pod after that, but we'll definitely talk. Yeah. And the reason I want to bring this up is because I wanted to point out to the blog that I wrote for our website, thewaywenerd.com. I'm doing a 3-part expose on all the movies, DC properties that have been made, including Vertigo titles, and even crap bag movies like Green Lantern, which is actually better than some that are out there, and you'll see when I rank them all. But Superman's up, part one. It's about Superman and about all the Superman movies. Part two is about Batman. Part three is about the rest. Anyway, the other bit, and the reason I bring that up is because I want Josh Moorhead to read my blog, because he told me something the other day that he thought would bother me. It didn't bother me so much, but I'd like to talk about it next week. He does not like the original Superman movies with Christopher Reeve. The first two. You can hate 3 and 4. That's fine.
They're
3 and 4
silly.
Are terrible. But,
3 and 4 are terrible.
And a crippled guy flying.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yes.
There it is.
Yes.
This is going to be our funniest part.
Okay, wait. Guys. There's a joke for that, then. Why didn't Superman save the boy falling from the building?
You mean the Niagara Falls?
Because he's in a wheelchair.
Are you telling a joke?
I am. You guys aren't listening.
I wasn't. I'm sorry. I just got
crickets.
A
there were understand. Crickets for that. No, you said a crippled guy flying. So that's never mind. This is all bad now.
Let's move on.
Quickly got derailed.
Let's not talk about Christopher Reeve being crippled. Rest in peace, Mr. Reeve.
I love Christopher Reeve as Superman.
I do too. I love it a lot, and you'll see it in my blog how much I love it. And I just want Josh to read that so we can talk about it a little more in detail. Maybe not so much on the pod, but a little bit on the pod. But anyway,
Dean Cain is my Superman.
Ooh, yeah. Dean Cain is good. I will give you this too. Margot Kidder and the poem that she speaks or whatever in the first Superman is pretty terrible.
The poem?
Can you read my mind?
Right?
Can you read my mind?
The can you read my mind
I
or
like
whatever
that
thing.
Piece.
Yeah. It's just cheesy.
Well,
and
it is cheesy. But the reason, I mean, at the very least, that movie was important because it was the first time someone took a comic book seriously.
Yes.
You know, it might have been
silly
now, but talking to my father, like, I was only, I think, a year old when that movie came out, but talking to my father about it, he, like, that was an amazing thing to see Christopher Reeve fly. Like, the tags were, "You will believe a man could fly."
That's fair.
That was the tagline.
But can he fight? And can he crow? Sorry.
And it was the first anemic skeleton to be cast as Lois Lane. So,
hey, Erica Durance from Smallville was all kind of shapely. She was definitely not a skeleton. She was all kinds of shapely. But anyway, she is. All right. The only other DC news that I wanted to share is they finally showed a promo for Supergirl and Flash crossover.
Yes.
Which is pretty exciting because, I mean, having two networks, competing networks, do that, it's not
like
really
semi-competing networks.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean,
CBS owns half a CW.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Warner Brothers has the other half.
I can't wait for...
yes, I did know that. Never mind. I didn't.
The ratings on that when a bunch of like Trump voters are like, honey, the Supergirl's going to flash us this week. We've got to watch. They're like, oh, shit.
No, wasn't that Jeb Bush?
Oh, yeah, Jeb Bush. Yeah, was the one
it's all the same. It's all the same. I'm sure the people that were supporting Jeb are definitely supporting Trump. But let's not get political on this because we can go for hours on that topic. The reason I kind of bring it up is just because the other day, I think it was Kyle I was talking to. It might have been Josh. I always forget which one of you guys I'm talking about.
We're all interchangeable.
All you blonde, blue-eyed, generic white people. White guy. Yeah, you guys all look the same to me. Even if you're some of my best friends. We were talking about Deadpool crossing over into a DC movie. If anybody's going to do it, it would be something like that. Like,
that wasn't
do you think it would be possible someday?
It's not possible.
Because the comic books do it.
Yeah, but... The comic books did it when both companies were at such a point where they needed money that desperately. I don't think we're going to get to that point in the film world because it's too much
money to be sorted out. So you don't think like if it might be the last ditch effort, like if like Spielberg's words prove prophetic and this bubble pops sooner rather than later, that's the like the last thing they'll throw. Hey, this would be someone we can squeeze as much out of the public.
Nah,
no, never.
Nah, I don't think so. It would have to be like 20 years from now when it's like
everybody's out of every single idea.
What if Disney friggin' buys DC away from Warner Brothers?
Well, that's not happening either.
Yeah, what are we talking about?
The ground we're sitting on would fall out from under us. Like they need that property.
Hey, we're in Southern California. That might happen.
Yeah.
But then that would be.
Well, don't worry. We have a rock here. We have
the Sandra.
Yeah, we have a rock here. He'll punch it. Don't worry. He'll punch the earthquake.
It's fine.
We're all good on there. All right, we'll move on from DC because Kyle's getting bored.
I was just going to keep making jokes.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
But here's the thing, though. Sorry,
No, we can bring it back. Go ahead. Bring it back.
This idea of, like, DC and Marvel crossing over, I just can't... Nothing jumps into my mind like, oh, man, I would love to see, blank.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... Like, I would love to see Spider-Man against Batman.
Well, I don't necessarily.
Or like, they do have to fight. Not even against, but even like, I don't know. It just feels like so different.
It does in the tone of the movies that are now. Yes.
The only way I would want to see it, I think, is if they did something like what they did a while back when they did the Amalgam comics, which you guys won't be as familiar with. Dan probably is, but
I didn't read them. I know Sharp.
For instance, they mixed the best one in my opinion was Wolverine and Batman, and they mixed them together, like meshed them together to create Darkclaw. So they basically took a Marvel character and a DC character and mashed them together, and the resulting love child or whatever you want to call it was the new character for the Amalgam comic. So it was cool. It was like a DC Marvel crossover, but I don't see that happening in a cinematic way.
That's what I was going to say. There's so much, a lot of the characters are such mirror images of each other, too, that, if you put Batman and Daredevil in the same space, not only would they not have anything to do, they'd probably just end up, like, making out with each other.
Right? Which I thought would be a better meshing.
What if you make it a comedy and go back to, like, Kyle's idea of a road trip movie and have, like, Bruce Wayne, Ben Affleck, and Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man going on a road trip and have no superhero shit at all until the end of the movie?
That's the stuff that should be left for our dreams. Like when I talk about like, oh my god, like this movie, it's like a dream you had. There's stuff that's actually the dream you had that doesn't need to happen.
All right. Yeah. Well, when it does, we'll have this conversation for.
We can revisit that. Yeah.
Because I think the studios will get that desperate. I mean, they let Spider-Man go to Marvel, well, kind of. So and they said that would never happen.
That's shared custody.
They said that would. This would be two. They said that would never happen. So and it happened. So
it's way different.
No, but like we've run into issues just on Pretty Little Liars, like putting comics in things.
Yeah.
Like when I did the webisodes, and this is just the webisodes. This isn't even the show itself. We wanted to have a character reading a comic, and ABC Family was like, "Well, no, you can't use a DC comic. You have to use a Marvel comic."
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers is like, you can't use a Marvel comic, you have to use a DC comic. So he ended up using like a
Dark Horse
independent comic. Yeah.
Alright. Fair enough. Although it seems like I've seen a couple episodes where we've had and it's where in our character Lucas's loft, it's been all DC stuff. Like in his
it's because we just don't tell ABC fans.
Right. I'm pretty sure they see it. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. Moving on. kind of big issue in the news lately, and this is probably a bad thing. Star Trek Beyond is having some reshoots.
Yeah.
Now, my question to you is not so much about Star Trek, but has there ever been a time where a reshoot, and not a planned reshoot, because you said, because Force Awakens,
that's why
reshoots.
Star Trek is bad.
They always have budget in advance for reshoots.
Yes.
Nowadays.
Yeah. Yes.
In most, but that's not what this is.
How do we know?
Right.
So because little about
the,
it.
The way, because they said. They didn't say this was in the schedule. They're like,
well, but there's a difference
new
between
cast.
One new cast member.
There's a difference between budgeting for reshoots and planning specifically what you're going to reshoot.
Yeah, well, like the Marvel movies and Force Awakens and stuff, they left time and like they tell their actors ahead of time, like our shooting schedule is this 3 months, but leave yourself like this week in like November or something, because after we look at our first draft, we might tweak it.
Yeah.
And Star Trek was the opposite. It was, oh shit, we don't like what we have. We have to add stuff.
How much could they be adding, though? I mean, it's a week-long shoot.
It seems like, I mean, it seems like it's more than connective tissue, but it's probably,
it could probably be
a thread.
Or it could be a whole action sequence. I mean, Lucas did that with Attack of the Clones.
It doesn't seem like it's an action sequence.
But I'm just saying, like, there's a lot you can do in a week is what I'm trying to say. Right. Because, like, the whole sequence on Geonosis, when, like, they're in the droid-making factory, that was not in any of the original script, the original cut, the original anything. Lucas watched the movie and he went, more video games, and then he called everybody back, and you can watch on the DVD like Natalie Portman running around like a blue room, looking around like, "What am I doing?" And he's like, "Dark," and she's like, "Huh?" And then that's a fun sequence, but I'm just saying like that's the difference between like allotting that space and just compensating.
World War Z.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
World War Z.
Okay.
Big reshoots.
Yeah.
And you tell me, but it was
late in the game. Changed the ending.
Yeah.
Great thing.
Mm-hmm. Because I think I like...
It can be good, but it's just usually a sign of something.
I think, unfortunately, I don't know why I have such a... I don't want to say distaste for zombies, but I just don't like zombie stuff. Except for comedies. I didn't really like World War Z, but I read what the original story and ending was, and that sounded more interesting to me, the whole... where they played up more about Pitt being an atheist and the whole Matthew Fox.
Yes, go to South America to rescue his wife from the man who's enslaved her.
I mean,
it just sounded like it was complicated and something you couldn't do in the 45 minutes the movie would have left.
It just would have made it something different because World War Z wasn't any different than any
what's,
other
what's happening
zombie
with,
movie. There's just more.
With Star Trek Beyond is... there was something wrong with the car. Right now it's in the shop. And when it comes out, it could be better off, it could be fixed, or it could be like, oh, this thing's totaled.
Well, I just hope, because like that first trailer didn't bother me as much as bothered other people. However, I can understand why people weren't as excited, because it just seemed like a Guardians of the Galaxy retread, where you just, you know, use a pop song, a hip song, and just show a bunch of action sequences. But Peg was really pissed at that trailer.
Right.
He was. So.
Well, because... I'm not the biggest Star Trek guy, but like if you're a Star Trek fan, you like something cerebral.
Yeah.
Yes.
Paramount can't market a franchise on, can't have a thoughtful, cerebral sci-fi franchise. They need $1 billion, or they hope, from these movies. The last one undergrossed the first one with 3D, so that trailer is very much them, you know, repackaging it, being like, it's all the extreme you wanted, when in fact I'll see it and I'll probably really enjoy it, but it's the worst of both worlds, because to the average fan, they're gonna go, well, I already have Guardians of the Galaxy, I have Star Wars, I have like Captain America Civil War this summer, like I don't need to see that. And to the hardcore Star Trek fans, they go, that's not fucking Star Trek.
I just hope, because Simon Pegg is very vocal about what he thinks is crap and what he thinks is good, especially in the sci-fi universe. And I respect him, even though I don't always agree with his opinions. All I say is this movie better be fucking good. I put a lot of pressure on Simon Pegg,
yeah,
because this movie better be fucking good. If you've been talking a lot of game, you better play.
Well, one thing with Star Trek too, as far as cerebral stuff goes, and this is why I'm worried after the trailer, and again, I'll probably see it and enjoy it, but even if I think back with the other two, and I enjoyed those for what they were. They were fun. The new cast, I think, is still perfectly cast. But I grew up with The Next Generation, and you know, once I started watching those, I went back and I watched all of the original series with my dad. I watched all of the movies. My dad worked on the first one, so I was used to Star Trek tackling real world issues, but in a science fiction way, and that's what ultimately science fiction started off being. It was a way to talk about issues going on in the world, but in a fantastical setting, so that it wasn't a blatant, oh, this is what's happening, and this is our opinion, and these are the questions we're posing.
The original show was.
It was ahead of its time. Yeah, and it's, I mean, the first interracial kiss, you know, Star Trek between Kirk and Uhura. And
an amazing episode with the two warring factions where, like, one half was black and one half was white.
Yeah.
It was reversed.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys look exactly the same. It's like, it's insulting them to say that.
It's exactly, like, yeah.
Don't we see what we're talking about here, people? We're still dealing with this stuff 50 years later.
Exactly, and so I don't know why we can't. In movie form, I know we have to have action, and I know it's a business, and we have to compete with the other sci-fi franchises, but we shouldn't, because that's what sets Star Trek apart from those other franchises. When I go to see a Star Trek movie, I know what I'm getting. When I go to see a Star Wars movie, I know what I'm getting, and it's two sides of the spectrum.
Well, when Star Trek and the Darkness tried to do that, it didn't please the audience either.
That's true.
A small portion of it, be fair, because a lot of people say that, but there are more people that enjoyed Star Trek and the Darkness than didn't.
I don't think that's true.
That is very true. I can show you proof online.
Well, the fans voted it the worst Star Trek movie.
Okay.
I enjoy it.
A small group of fans at a convention.
No, but I'm just saying, if you go online, most people are like, I did not like that movie.
That's because, and like I've been saying forever, hate is so much louder than love. I can show you proof on Rotten Tomatoes. There's 350,000 users who rated that movie. 90% of them liked it. 90% of the critics liked it. I'm just, the sheer numbers are backing that people liked that movie. But there is a vocal, very loud vocal minority within the Star Trek community that fucking hated it.
But also, since in the 3 years since it was released, like the week it came out, like when Rotten Tomatoes critics came out, and they're like, I loved it. Like, you find those people now, which could be an effect of, like, the spiral of hate, being like,
that sounds like easily led sheep that are just following all these other haters.
But I also don't know. It's not...
I'm just sick of hearing about that movie. When you show me something that is... And it had the cinema score of an A, which is hard to do. A minus is hard to do. And it had an A. Not a minus, not a B plus, A. So... To me, it's just there was like I said, there's a very loud, small minority. The movie made more money than the first one, and I know box office isn't a sign for what is a good movie, but combine that with all the critics. I'm just saying, I don't like that one gets shit on unfairly, and it is by far not the worst Star Trek movie. Star Trek, the motion picture is way worse. Star Trek V is an
absolute crap fest. I agree with you.
These fans are reacting emotionally because. They took the same story with Khan. They just reversed Kirk and Spock, which I thought was awesome because at this moment, the emotional journey that Spock was going through, it fit.
It's not embraced in the way that other movies have been embraced. And that's why Paramount's compensating with their marketing everything because this is their last franchise, essentially, and they need people to buy into it. And it's...
Well,
you don't know where it's at.
Well, I'll give them that, and they're obviously listening to some of the hardcore fans and the people that don't like it. But I agree with Potter in the fact that these last two Star Trek movies, as fun as they have been, they don't feel like Star Trek. They don't. They just don't.
Well, they do in a sense, but they give us
just with the character performances.
Yes, they give us character performances that are great, and it is cool to see some awesome Star Trek ship battles and. That's great, and I even think if I had to look for a theme or message, especially for Into Darkness, it's kind of the whole Manifest Destiny thing. Like, let's start a war because you know it's inevitable. It's going to happen anyway. Yeah,
it's not Manifest Destiny.
San Francisco because it's 9/11.
That's true.
It's 9/11, which is played.
It's just lazy. It's lazy metaphor.
But yes. Yeah, it is. So for me, that's an issue, but it's a lazy issue to discuss or to.
And it's like 13 years later.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So it's not cerebral or groundbreaking like Star Trek is known for. That's what I have come to realize about
this.
I guess
the thing is I enjoy the smaller moments that are in these movies rather than the big ones. Because all these movies are doing, and we were discussing this before, like Josh and I, how they keep having to up the stakes, where it's like, all right, we're gonna destroy this area, okay, we're gonna destroy this country, okay, now we gotta destroy the world. Like X-Men Apocalypse was a perfect example.
Yeah.
Where they're going with this movie where Apocalypse is threatening the world.
We should get into that. We should get into the trailer.
We can get into that.
Yeah.
We can discuss the trailer. So
I just
X-Men Apocalypse.
Kyle back. I miss Kyle.
Kyle!
Well, it's funny because he is a Star Trek, fan, so
I am.
I'm interested that he didn't have anything to say about those.
It's
but
just, there's nothing to say about them. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about the first two of the reboot. They were fun. They were fine. The first one I liked better than the second one. The second
one too.
Had a ton of issues. Less lens flares, so that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
I had no problem with lens flares in the first one.
No, I love lens flares.
It's just I liked the second one when I saw it. I don't like it as much now. I don't think it super holds up well.
Right. That's why I was
It was the kind of thing like the Spock-Kirk flip was fun and clever the first time I saw it, and then it just sort of, it lost.
Feels unnecessary.
It's novelty, and there's a lot of the plot that just doesn't, if you could just inject him with, you know, mutated triple blood, then yay, no more medicine.
Right.
Everybody's immortal.
I think Kyle's emblematic of
or
when he's trying to make that it's not embraced, and the fandom in movie going in general is kind of like, meh.
Yeah, I mean, my problem here's my big problem with the Star Treks and why I think they're lazy, and even if I enjoy them, why they're not next gen, they're not even Voyager, is that they just invent ways out of problems and then pretend they never came up with that invention later. Like, what's his face? Like, they beam themselves halfway across the galaxy onto the ship.
Right.
Okay, so now nobody needs
starships.
Any special transporters or starships. You can just fucking beam yourself anywhere with just normal equipment because he figured out the thing.
Yeah.
And we don't need doctors. If you die, we'll just inject you with some triple blood.
Yeah.
So now they've solved death. They've solved travel in two movies. So, great. What else do we need to do?
Well, I think they probably could prevent the Enterprise from exploding if they had just ejected the warp.
Yeah, they really need
the third one, you know. Because that's
always
the solution for every problem.
They need
to
stop destroying the Enterprise.
Let's just eject the warp core, though.
Every movie.
When the Enterprise double Z. I don't know. It's just, look, I enjoy them. The casting's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
The characters are nailed, but
I personally, the
writing's... What? The plots are very suspect.
As much as I like having Star Trek back in the theaters, I'm more excited about Star Trek being back on TV because that's where it belongs.
Yes,
episodic television is what Star Trek is about.
Yep.
The reason they made the movies in the 80s was because people wanted to spend time with that crew again, but they weren't going to make a TV show, obviously. Like, hey, we can do this in the theaters. So, and the Next Generation was just a continuation of the 7 years they built up. And this one is just, even though it's the same characters, you're right. At first, I thought it was really clever that they reboot the whole universe by saying, hey, it doesn't mean that timeline doesn't exist. It's just we have a new timeline, like the Back to the Future thing. Hey, we're all on this tangent. So, you know.
Star Trek is better when the scope is small.
Yeah, I agree.
The ramifications of what's happening are potentially huge, but the scope stays small.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I even been watching Voyager lately, and I've enjoyed some of those episodes very immensely, especially the later seasons.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's get into and let's talk about the...
Now that we veered off into Star Trek for 20 minutes.
Yes. That's okay. I knew
absolutely.
Kyle had something to say. See?
Yeah, I did. I just didn't want to get into all of it. But it's
No, that's what we're here for. That's what we want. We got plenty of time. We got some more fun stuff to talk about. Josh brought up the X-Men Apocalypse trailer.
Shit on everything this week.
That's fine.
This is why Kyle shits on nerds.
Let's do it. Josh, you brought up to me a couple times that the X-Men trailers usually don't excite you until that very last one when it shows kind of what the story's about.
Right.
Whereas, and there, most of these two trailers are
just ironic because we were saying that on what, Tuesday? And then we get the
last
trailer.
I thought it was so odd. Yeah,
we get the last.
Although
trailer
it says
today.
Trailer number two, there might be another one.
When's the movie coming out?
This is like the main trailer.
May.
Later,
end of
Memorial
May.
Day weekend. Yeah. So, yeah.
Thoughts?
It's gray. It's blood to me. And I realized why. It's because there's trailers sell themselves on, like, moments or set pieces, or, like, we've all seen 20-whatever James Bond movies, but it's not until you get the new trailer and you see, oh, my God, he's got to do that with a plane. Yeah. Or, oh, my God, right. That's his quip to that villain.
Yeah.
That you go, shit. But there's nothing, like, there was no staging in this trailer. There was no set piece. There's no sense of plot. It's just that this guy's really bad, and at some point we're going to be standing in the middle of a city falling apart, yelling at him.
Yeah.
And I've seen that a lot. That's the last level of a video game. It's not a movie to me.
Josh, so, forget everything you know.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said literally saying that line.
I'm so glad you said that line, Kyle, because I people need to stop saying that in any movie.
Oh, right.
Retire that line completely.
Please.
Not to mention that the effects weren't... You talk about things getting bigger and bigger. Like, it's such a cooler moment, even in First Class, when Magneto's holding a sub up over Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cooler shot and moment than this obviously, like, this Lego bridge is being blown down. Like, it's...
I like it's a hodgepodge. The moment that you're talking about in this trailer that I like, or actually I think it was in the trailer before, is I love the... when Apocalypse starts growing. Like, I don't know who that is he's fighting, but I think it's Quicksilver. And he slams him on the ground, and he just starts growing. And then this one actually added to it. He throws him against the wall. Whoever that mutant is, I think it's Quicksilver, is dead. There's no way he survived that.
I'll tell you why he survived, because I thought that moment was lame, too, because I was like, isn't that obviously a dream sequence or something? Because they're all talking about, like, the terrible visions they're having of him.
It could be a dream. That's a real moment. It could be a dream, but Apocalypse can do that. Like, you know, he's extremely powerful. Like,
yeah.
I like what Oscar Isaac is doing with him. Like, he's definitely chewing up the scenery. Like, no, but that's why they play these supervillains, so they can
right,
do that.
Right.
And we haven't seen Oscar Isaac do anything like that. He's always been likable guy.
Yeah.
Even Llewyn Davis, when he was like, he's still likable, even though he's, you know, kind of a, I don't know if loser is the right word, but you know what I mean?
My problem with, I guess it's the trailer before this most recent one, and I have problems with this one too. But you know how you get the trailer and everything, and like Josh was saying, you get the set pieces, you get the action sequences, you get little bits of things like, hey, this movie's going to have this, and then it goes to the next thing. So it keeps you like, oh man, that's going to be cool. Oh, but I want more. Right. It's supposed to make you want more and more and more. So then there's always the, you know, the titles and the directed by and all that stuff, that card. And then you get sometimes get one little quick teaser image.
Yeah, one more beat.
Yeah. So the beat is Professor X with a bald head.
Ugh. But that's the first trailer. You're talking about.
Is that the first trailer? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
they don't do that in the second one.
Okay, no, yeah, and that's thank fine. God. But my problem is right off the bat, like that image is still sticking with me. Like, oh, this is what we're selling this movie on, is that Professor X is finally going to have a bald head. No shit. We know he's going to have a bald head. Bald head. Who cares? That that shouldn't be your final beat of a trailer, because
it's fan service and it's blatant and it's not.
It is, but it doesn't need to be there. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It's not good. It's not like, it's not good fan servicey.
Yeah, although they've been,
like I was telling Dan, if they get to the end of it and he's bald just to be bald, then like, what the fuck are you even doing?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm glad you said that too.
But it's almost
I hope they give it a reason.
But it's almost worse if the reason they give is like, oh my god, you guys, well, first of all, does he shave his head?
It doesn't look, it looks like he's gonna completely lose his head. I shave my head, like, and I can never get that close to
I know what's gonna happen. It's gonna be like, that was such a traumatic experience with Apocalypse that I lost all my hair.
That's what scares me.
Listen to
the other thing that scares me, though, and I'm just gonna be, if this happens, I will laugh out loud. If he's like, you know, my mutant powers with this helmet aren't powerful enough, I have to shave my head so that my skin is in contact with the helmet and I can increase my telekinetic psychic powers.
What if
I will just laugh my ass off, and I will get shit thrown at me
movie,
if that happens.
The movie also seems to have the problem
sure other people laugh too.
That Superman has, but the opposite, where like the problem with writing a Superman movie or a Superman story is that he's so powerful. How do you come up with compelling situations for him? Apocalypse. They literally say in the trailer, I was kind of out the moment Professor X goes, he can control all of us. So how do you even have a fight?
Yeah.
Right, unless he decides. It's the Jedi problem. It's the same problem you have when you get to the prequels.
Yeah.
You've created a thing that is way too powerful, so you need something even more powerful for it to overcome.
Yeah. The clone troopers?
Well, no, just the Jedi in general.
But, I mean, the clone troopers were the solution. Just outnumber the motherfuckers. Look, I know people say that about Superman, and I feel that, but the problem is, in the movies, for some reason, won't explore these ideas. Superman is easily stoppable. There's so many characters in the DC Universe that can beat him. There's so many magic. He's very vulnerable to magic. He can't fight it. You threaten a person's innocent person, that you can stop him that way. There's his humanity is always his greatest strength is his greatest weakness.
And I get that, but
what I get upset about is like, and people say that he's so. None of our other superheroes lose. Wolverine's indestructible. The Hulk's indestructible.
Well, no, they're inherently more compelling because they're. Batman's a human being.
You believe Iron they Man's can be
right. You how? Know. You they know.
Have to. How is Superman's story a man who has no connection to his entire world is gone. He's the ultimate fucking immigrant. The things he has to deal with growing up and look. That's why Smallville was so compelling for 10 years. I mean, it stayed on your.
Yeah, Smallville was super compelling.
Superman's story, Clark Kent's story, is very compelling. Now, what you're saying is they haven't done it right.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, as a character, he's not as vulnerable. And people like vulnerability in their characters.
You can do stuff with... You can't treat Iron Man and Superman the exact same way.
Right, of course not.
Which is but kind of what they try to do. I mean, and not literally those two, but...
I think it's also a problem of creation versus now. People now want vulnerability in their characters. Back when guys like Superman and even Captain America were created, that was done because people wanted a golden, shining hero that had no vulnerabilities. That won all the time in any situation, capable of defeating all odds with no risk to themselves.
But you guys, Kryptonite. But,
well, yeah, yes, but I'm just saying, like, that was more of a thing back then, and now people want these vulnerabilities, which is fine.
This is the same problem that Infinity War will probably have, too, that I've already started thinking about. It's basically, like, this movie, like, Apocalypse looks like it's going to be very little plot, and then just, like, 50 minutes of, like, all of them beating up on him until, for some reason, he's finally, like, uncle. Like, and I don't know how good of a movie
he'll go. They'll figure out what you have to do to lock him away again, and it's just you're right though. The frustrating part is if he can control all of them, then it's just his choice to not do so.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, is it just I mean, I feel like what's going to happen is he'll start controlling Magneto.
Yeah.
You know, so he'll control Magneto. Magneto and his people be fighting Professor Xavier and his people. Then they'll figure out a way to stop him, except he wants followers, not slaves. Yeah. So he's not going to control everybody. He's just going to try to get them into submission or something.
He wants you to come willingly, basically.
Just to make it...
No, I'm actually... And I've been fearful of this movie since I heard what it was about because of all the things that you guys are discussing. Like, this is going to be the capper of Bryan Singer's X-Men universe. Like, there's a rumor that he's going to direct the next one, but it's supposed to be not a reboot so per se, but a whole new set of characters.
Right.
And hopefully they make it smaller again, like the first two X-Men movies.
It needs to be smaller again.
Because I still don't think, as much as I like First Class, as much as I like Days of Future Past, they haven't been as good as those first two. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but they've done a lot of things right, so.
One thing that the X-Men series has always been good about, to kind of tie back to Star Trek, is it's always been really good allegory. That's missing in this one too.
Agreed. Agreed. There was some the other ones had something to say.
Yeah.
It really is. If you take this out, it's like some racial minority comes out of the thing and can suddenly control. I mean, this has become like a metaphor for like Martin Luther King.
Maybe it's a metaphor for Bryan Singer himself. He's like, I have the power to screw any of these young girls, but I want them to follow me to my pool house. I don't want to drag them there.
That's pretty much what the theory is, that why he did Superman. He's like, ooh, I get to fuck Superman? Nice. So, but anyway.
I mean, he did. Did you see that movie?
Bazing. And although I'll tell you this, I hope that after this, Bryan Singer doesn't do the next X-Men movie. I hope he takes a break and starts doing small movies like.
Well, we could be relieved because
he is a great director.
We know what the next two X-Men movies are, as long as they don't cancel one of them. It's Gambit and the final Wolverine.
Yeah.
And I would see
and Deadpool too.
At this point, I would see the final Wolverine movie of Hugh Jackman ending. What will end up being like a 20-year career?
That's
right.
That's the end. That's the end of the series right there. Because and Gambit will probably start a new one. Or Deadpool's a different company. Is Gambit a different company?
No, it's all Fox.
No, it's all Fox.
Oh, yeah, sorry, all Fox.
Yeah.
So yeah. So the only thing they could do new with X is X-Force. So hopefully they do X. X-Force is a completely different
thing. Which would be cool. And if they're going to have Cable in. The second Deadpool, that could be a jumping off point for that. With Colossus and Negasonic and all of that. I mean,
Ryan Reynolds already said that's the end game for this Deadpool thing, is they want an X-Force movie. So X-Force is the only way I think they can go with that.
I also wonder, I just thought about this too, because the trailers for Apocalypse have not been good. They have not been good.
No.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of what happened with Fantastic Four and everything too, where Marvel was like, okay, you guys can make your movie, but we're not going to help you. We're going to stop making Fantastic Four comic books.
Yeah, but
we're not
going to
do any. Well, no, I know, but I'm just saying it feels similar. Like we're not going to do any action figure marketing, anything.
Well, they
like
don't
that
have
for
any
movie.
Say to do with that.
No,
no,
but it's
saying
still
they're not helping the movies along in the comic book stores and the promotion and like
tie-ins
or anything like that.
It just smells like maybe it's it could also be a ploy by Marvel to eventually regain the X-Men franchise.
No,
or
yeah, if the Marvel juggernaut got behind something like Fantastic Four, that
maybe
it would have made a difference.
But they don't cut the trailers.
No.
It's all Fox's say to how they market it, and if they want more toys or less toys, and if they want Burger King to push Professor X on the kids' meal, like that's on them, not Marvel.
But
put his face on the bun.
Yeah. But with Marvel Studios operating the way it is right now, and getting the rights back to Spider-Man, or at least shared rights, I wonder if there is some sort of play going on where they're trying to do anything they can to get a shared X-Men situation with Fox. And I do think the Spider-Man movie with Marvel and Sony is going to be it's going to set the precedent.
Well,
for
I think
how
I remember reading
too.
Something around when Avengers was coming out last year, because some wacky rumor got out that Hugh Jackman was going to be in it for a second, and a lot of Marvel people said, we're glad that we don't have to deal with X-Men, because it would be way too much.
What
are they going
to
do after Infinity Wars?
See, and that's what I think, too.
Well, they're trying to make Inhumans into their X-Men.
Well, I heard actually that plan cinematically is out, because they're dealing with the Inhumans now on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
They are.
They canceled the Inhumans movie in 2019.
Well, they canceled it, but they also might have pushed
or
it back.
They pushed
there's
it
a
back,
rumor
yeah.
that they pushed it back.
Well,
anyway, I'm not excited about it either way. But
yeah, I don't like the Inhumans in the comics.
Their idea is they want to be able to do with the features what they did with the comic books, which is like, okay, yeah, you liked Avengers, but now it's the new Avengers. So would I see a movie in 8 years that instead of Iron Man, Cap, and Hulk is Doctor Strange and Black Panther and Ant-Man? Probably.
Yes.
And that's what they're betting on.
Well, and this is the thing, though. But what they need to do is what Star Wars is doing. They need to do standalones. And what Kyle has been saying for a long time, they need to go smaller. Like, after you do Infinity War, where it's threatening the entire universe, where the hell do you go next?
Which I think they have some, they register a little bit. Because
I think
even
so.
Though,
I hope so.
When your soldier destroyed like a bay instead of a city, like it was still much smaller.
Yeah.
And Ant-Man, no pun intended, was smaller.
So Ant-Man is the way to go post Infinity Wars.
Yeah.
Like I understand everything up between now and Infinity Wars is all just setting that up.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything between Civil War and Infinity Wars is just, hey guys, Infinity Wars is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this are we in phase two?
We're in phase three now.
Phase three.
Phase three.
Yeah.
Ant-Man ended phase two.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Okay. And then after Avengers,
I think actually Ultron ended phase two, didn't
they? No, they count Ant-Man as
Ultron.
Officially Ultron like is the end of the story
Ant-Man
arc
after Ultron.
Yeah, but for packaging purposes and marketing purposes, like if you buy the phase two like collector's set, it's like an Ant-Man's in there too.
Well, Ant-Man
in the small
voice doesn't really have any bearing on the rest.
No, there's like one sequence where like I think they say, like, they're probably busy dropping City. Like,
yeah, there's
Michael, a, they make reference to it, but it has no story connection.
Yeah.
Speaking of large Disney properties.
I know, I was getting there. I was getting there, but we just got all into the movie Disney. Okay, so there's some big news out there, some sequel news. They have decided that the fedora and the whip will not be retired. We'll hand it off.
Yes.
Yep. Steven Spielberg.
50 Shades of Grey 4.
I'm so excited for that. Anyway, so it's Disney has allowed Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford to Febreze the stink that was Indy 4. And the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Now, I don't hate that movie as much as a lot of people. However, I will concede there is a shitload of problems in that movie.
Oh, man.
And it was mostly because I...
Like its existence.
Which, yes. Josh and I were discussing, Moorhead and I were discussing this earlier, how incredibly powerful George Lucas was, at least, that he could tell two people, Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford, this is the way we're going to do your George Lucas voice, please.
Well, it's just like, it shows
no,
you...
No, do your George Lucas voice.
I keep that there's pressure. I'm just kidding. But this, like, it showed... Okay, so it took almost 20 years for Crystal Skull to happen, and it was because of George haggling.
Yeah.
And... It shows you
I
how...
I like that you're looking at the recording.
Because I'm so emphatic.
Like,
yeah.
You really want the audience to understand.
Listen to him, people.
Yeah. And it's so funny to me. It shows you the problem, like, in the relationship, if you will, that, like, literally the minute George, like, leaves the house, they're like, okay, indie party! It doesn't take 20 years. They get through Star Wars. There's the rumor before... Harrison signed on to Star Wars that he would only if they let him do another indie movie. Because I think, like you said, he very much feels the weight. And Spielberg was oddly open about how much fans didn't like it. And he was like, yeah, I know it's not that great. So they really want to get it right. Because it does have a legacy.
Yeah.
And he did. He did.
And they have a legacy.
And George deserves to be thrown under the bus, but Spielberg did throw him under the bus a little bit when he said it. He's like, hey, if George writes it, I'm going to direct it, kind of thing. Like
he says on the Blu-ray special features, he's like, yeah, aliens. He's like, I refused and refused and refused until George said, all our interdimensional readings.
Yep.
And then he was like, and you see Steven go like, and I just told myself, like, all right. Like,
all right, Georgie. I got you,
but
buddy.
It's not just that. It's like the monkeys.
No,
monkeys. That's the worst part for me. The monkeys.
But yes, it over relied on CG. But I feel like that's all a bit of George too.
Yes,
like, I don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think that was like a Steven or Harrison idea. I think this movie.
Oh God, and the ants.
Yeah. Well,
actually, I like the ants.
The mummy ants.
The
whatever the fuck they were.
Big scarab thingies. Yeah.
Big damn ants. That was a great indie moment for me.
I like those ants too. Although the night I saw the movie, that was one thing. That was the dumbest part to me. Until like you go home and you look up and those ants are real and they really do that DNA strand thing. But it's still a stupid thing to choose because nobody knows that.
Right.
Everybody knows rats are creepy and that snakes are bad.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to convince me of that. But there's no way, much in the same way that there's no way that they could really screw up Force Awakens because they knew what they had to do to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what we're getting.
Yeah. Well, what I can forgive the monkeys in Crystal Skull. What took me out of Indiana Jones land in that movie was the very end when the interdimensional, air-quoted spacecraft takes off, and all of the huge-ass chunks of rock are just left floating in the air for a good 2 or 3 seconds, and then they all fall at the same time.
I love that moment.
I don't, though, because that... Okay, I will say this as far as big moments in the movie.
That is,
I don't
like,
know.
The biggest nitpicky thing
I
know.
In
the movie over
there.
No. I don't hate the
yeah,
movie over
that. That story structure
like,
with the rocks.
Seriously, the second the portal closed, those rocks should have fallen to the ground.
It's
there's
not
no
that,
residual
no.
interdimensional energy,
I know.
Guys.
I'm not
right,
even saying... I'm just saying that there shouldn't have been rocks like that anyway, because Indiana Jones, that's not Indiana Jones to me. Yes, I know, we get a big, huge boulder in Raiders that chases after him, but the mechanics of that make more sense.
Maybe
to
the
me.
Most clever.
I mean, there's also the rocks that fall when he's trying to escape the.
Maybe.
Yes, yes, but.
Maybe the most clever thing that movie did that is Spielberg and Lucas and the writers and Harrison all laughing at you right now is that it literally opens with a shot of a mountain being turned into a molehill. Yes. Okay? So that's their attitude.
Very good point. That's true.
That's their attitude. That was them trying to tip off to the audience, like, look, we're just here to have a good time. But what they didn't realize was that just because it didn't have to be a big important thing and it was supposed to be another episode of an adventure didn't mean that it was entitled to be shitty.
Yes, so that's a very good way to put it.
So your argument is, like, a little besides the point, but they still have, like, they still realize at the end of the day there's things they could have done better, and that's what they're trying to correct.
It is. And I will say, imagery-wise, like, okay, some people, I know some people are not happy with the nuclear explosion and the whole refrigerator sequence and all of that, and the 50s test town, and I actually loved most of that sequence, and I like the nuclear shot and him standing there watching.
Yeah, I love that shot.
That is my favorite shot in the whole movie.
To me, him surviving that blast, and I know people don't agree with me, but him surviving that blast is just as outlandish as them surviving jumping from a plane in a fucking raft and landing on a mountain.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. When the material between their bodies and that rock mountain is about as thin as you can get.
But you
somebody would have at least a broken bone.
You give that movie that moment because it's a better movie overall.
Yes.
But still, but I mean, and also, that's why people just attach to that. And
movies
like,
get a number of moments.
Yes,
they do. Exactly.
That,
yeah.
that you will buy before it becomes too much.
That and Mythbusters totally prove that you can jump out of a plane and land in a raft like that is plausible. Not completely proven, but plausible.
Well, like I said, I didn't say
you're still going to break bones.
I don't
like
care if they die.
That's
what I'm saying. Just a little bit of an injury. Somebody twist an ankle or something. Or got a scratch.
I think it's going to end up being a really special movie. And I think it's not going to take place in the 60s. I think it's going to be still in the 50s with either a Nazi or a commie villain that throws him back into something that happened to his past, and we still might get the, like, handing off where it's, like, a few sequences with Chris Pratt as Indy. So you go, we get the capper, we get our indie movie that's good with Harrison, but he's going to be 80 years old. Like, you can't expect him to go under the Jeep again.
Yeah.
And be dragged along the road. Like, we're going to get some awesome action sequences, but it's going to be a stunt guy.
I will say this. In the Crystal Skull, there's a moment that no matter how bad the movie is, it can't take it away from me. When the first time I saw it in the theater, and they have that scene where Harrison's jumping from car to car, back onto Mutt's motorcycle, and just go... That was so Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah. No, that was
so magical.
And you know what? It was practical. That was the only practical action sequence. It was like you could see it all working. It had nice camera work. Like, I like the jungle chase, but it's still CG.
Everything but the monkey.
Yes. And the other thing that annoyed me about the movie, I like the movie a lot more than most people do.
Yeah.
But, like, the night I saw it, it pissed me off. Is that they took Indy out a lot of the action. So I don't care if he's 80. You have to make him
trying to hand it off.
Yes.
So, like, a lot of the coolest things that happened in the jungle chase are Mutt-based. Yeah. Like, I would have rather seen Indiana Jones spread across two Jeeps sword fighting.
Yeah. Well, that was because at that time, that was the plan, was to pass it off to Shia LaBeouf until it turned out he was an asshole. And Spielberg and Harrison Ford hate him now. But I guess the flip side to that coin is that sequence that I love so much also gives us a taste of what could have been, which is kind of a sour taste now.
Yeah.
True. So, well, we also got the warehouse chase at the very
The warehouse
beginning,
chase
is great.
Yeah, the warehouse chase is good.
Yes, where he tries to make the jump and he doesn't quite make it. Like, there's a lot of good stuff.
Damn, I thought that was closer.
Yeah. Part of the problem with sort of these older movies being remade or redone or sequeled now is that you can do so much more now with computers.
Right.
Yeah.
They're all looking, to quote, I think... I don't even remember what it is. Some science-y movie. They're so... Okay, it is. It's Jurassic Park. They're so caught up in that they can do it, they don't stop to think if they should.
Yeah.
Like, there are some of these sequences in Star Trek, in the second Star Trek, where they destroy San Francisco.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Why? There's no point to it.
Yeah.
It just looks cool, and we feel like we can do it, so let's do it.
I think, especially after seeing the success of Force Awakens, not that it's not without its share of CG, but seeing how having things be real brings you into the world more, I think Spielberg will be on board with that.
Well, and almost nothing in Force Awakens is completely out of place from the original trilogy.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, there's none of those sequences other than maybe when the Rathkars are attacking on the ship that feels like, oh, this is something they absolutely could not have done before.
Right. Yeah.
This never would have been the old ones.
Yeah. And that's what kind of hurts with even the James Bond movies as they go on in time. They all still feel like of a part. And that's kind of, I think that's why people lash out so harshly against Crystal Skull 2 is you can't put it next to the, you can put it next to the other three in terms of like, it's just a fun adventure or whatever, but you can't have the CGI monkeys in the CGI jungle stand next to those matte paintings and the leap of faith.
Yeah, there's no the continuity.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, matte paintings, how we love matte paintings so much. And yes. They still work even now when they do them. But
I mean, like, to go back to the Lucas forcing thing, do you know why Temple of Doom was Temple of Doom? That was after a lot of haggling because fucking George Lucas wanted the whole movie to take place in a Scottish haunted castle, which is why there's a castle in Last Crusade.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is my favorite indie movie.
Because Spielberg had just finished on Poltergeist and didn't want to do another haunted house movie. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Interesting, I didn't know that. Right? Which if people don't know the legendary story that Tobey Hooper did not really direct that movie. It was Spielberg. Anyway, Poltergeist, by the way. anyway, so moving on, we're getting to the end of the podcast. There is actually a lot of Star Wars news, but we're going to save that for the next time because there is a shitload of Star Wars news. You know, you'd think there wouldn't be, but there actually is. Good boy. In fact, after the pod, I have an idea to discuss with these three gentlemen, and hopefully they're excited about it as I am, because I think you guys would be excited if we did
this. I don't want to have sex with you.
It's please.
Not personal.
I will consider it, what about depending if we roll on it? What I get in return.
Jesus. All right, anyway. Sounds like every girl I've ever asked that.
I'll be doing my hair, I think. I'll be busy doing my hair.
we're going to end the pod. I'm gonna give you guys a little bit of homework. The first one is an easy one that we've been discussing lately. Talking about all the remakes and reboots, like which the Ben-Hur trailer came out, the Tarzan. I didn't know it was a Ben-Hur movie. I didn't know that movie was being remade.
I didn't know until yesterday when Alina
new Tarzan.
Was like, hey. Ben-Hur.
So
Pete's Dragon.
That one actually looks good, though.
It does.
The reboots and remakes, all that stuff, there's a lot of that going on right now. And we had an interesting conversation about Back to the Future and recasting it and seeing who we'd like to see as certain parts. And I'm going to throw down a challenge to you guys. Every week, one of us will come in with a movie. Or not every week, but maybe once a month. We'll come in with a movie that we absolutely think should never, ever, ever, ever be rebooted or remade. Sequelized, okay, but never rebooted or remade. And I'm going to put the challenge out there for one of you guys to take up the mantle to try to convince me with a cast, a director, and a writer that would get me to go see that movie. My challenge to you guys is The Godfather. I think that is one of the most unremakable movies ever made. I don't think it should ever be touched. If you want to make a sequel that focuses on the next generation of the Corleones, I'd go see that. But remaking that movie, no. But the one you want to take a challenge and try to convince me.
We'll have to think about it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So next week, we'll figure it out. Well, next week, one of them will come back at me with a cast and a writer and a director, and the other two will help me out and judge to see if that was a good idea or not. So, and the other, not really a challenge, but a homework assignment with Zootopia just tearing it up at the box office. I wanted to hear from you guys what your favorite Disney classic is. So that era is the Snow White to Jungle Book, so 1938 to 1967. That's the Disney classic era. The non-classic era where they had a lot more misses than they had hits, which was started with Sword in the Stone, which was a hit, in 1970 to Oliver and Company in 1987, which was not a hit. So your favorite in that group, and the new era, which would be Little Mermaid to Zootopia now, which is a new classic era, or a diamond era, whatever they're going to call this era, but Disney's been tearing it up basically since Little Mermaid. There's a little lull in there where they weren't the Treasure Planet and Atlantis, but, you know, but give me your favorite there. And then the fourth one I'd like to hear, your favorite non-Disney animated feature. So think about it, fellas. Come back next week.
It's a lot of homework.
We'll discuss not as much as you think. Trust me. It's fun homework, too. Come on.
It's good.
We'll discuss. And, fantastic. Yeah, but and next week we'll all be ready to go see BVS with the exception of Kyle, who's going to wait for the crowds to disperse.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
So anyway, any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we get up on out of here?
I'm hungry.
Me too.
Yeah.
I want what he's having.
All right, there we go. There we go. So we're all hungry. We're going to go out and get some food. And by the way, happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Oh.
Of course, this will be airing the day after, but still, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy hangover.
Yeah. To my right, so hungover right now.
Oh, Kyle Down.
Cross him.
Joshua Potter.
Josh Forehead.
And I'm Danny Villalobos. We will see you next time on The Way We Nerd.
Thanks for listening. If you want more from the nerds, check us out on the intertubes at thewaywenerd.com. And if you haven't already, you should follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Way We Nerd, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, this is The Way We Nerd.